Thank you. By the way, I don't think I got that third question, but hopefully it will all be built in together. They're all related. But just on the first bit, I would kind of question the premise of the question to a certain extent, because I think there's always been a separation between feminism and Marxism. And I don't think the fault lines really change as much as each new generation of activists tends to assume. I think the form differs, but the same fundamental patterns reassert themselves because we're still operating within class society, and more specifically within capitalist society. So 100 years after the 1918 Representation of the People Act, it's worth examining the courageous, groundbreaking feminism of Emmeline Pankhurst, which was also separatist and elitist. And it's worth comparing that to the activity of her communist daughter, Sylvia, who focused more on working-class women in the East End. And the distance between these two counterposed approaches has varied during the last century, but the fundamental ideological divergence has remained. We think that the fight for women's emancipation is inextricably tied up with the fight for human emancipation. That is the struggle to end class society and all the forms of social oppression that it generates. And concrete struggles to address particular aspects of women's oppression today must be taken up. But the victories won can only be partial and transitory as long as capital rules. And the material basis for completely uprooting the cause of women's suffering requires a revolutionary social transformation, which I would argue can only be accomplished by the creation of a mass revolutionary party based on a Marxist program, composed of revolutionary women and men together in the same organization, committed to fight for the interests of all the exploited and oppressed. But I think it's important early on to try to clarify what the real, as opposed to imagined, differences are between Marxists and feminists. Because many feminists believe that socialists tend to see women's rights as something that we can just wait until the after revolution to solve. But I think that the genuine revolutionary left has always considered the fight for women's freedom as fundamental to the struggle for a socialist future. The struggle against the special oppression of women and other oppressed groups, racial, ethnic, sexual minorities, will be crucial to assembling the social forces necessary to effectively challenge the control of a powerfully entrenched ruling class, which is inconceivable without the active participation of half the population, obviously. But the converse is also true. To try to end women's oppression without a class perspective, without a perspective of overturning capitalist tyranny, is not only counterproductive, but in the end is always shown to be to result in the betrayal of those who most need to be unshackled, the poorest and most oppressed women around the world. And feminism, even in its socialist feminist manifestation, tends to prioritize female emancipation over all other questions, or at least to approach the problem of class divisions alongside gender divisions, to equate class oppression with patriarchy. And the advocates of intersectionality, for example, do this as well with so-called classism, which they put on a par with other isms. And this then tends to lead feminists always to put an emphasis on the autonomy of women's organizations. And our organization, which identifies with the tradition of the Russian Revolution, advocates the creation of a mass communist women's movement and organizations of other oppressed layers as transitional organizations, focused on the revolutionary mobilization of women by actively addressing their particular concerns. And to be effective, such organizations must, of course, exercise considerable autonomy in the sense of being able to decide how to allocate their forces, what priorities to pursue at a particular moment. But they exercise this autonomy as part of a division of labor and in coordination with other elements of a common revolutionary movement through a revolutionary party, and that is partly how they derive their power and education as well. So Marxists take women's rights seriously now, not just in a future communist society, and IBT comrades of the International Bolshevik Tendency, of which I'm a member, male and female, in Britain, Ireland, all around the world, to New Zealand. We've got a record of active participation in united fronts around specific issues, including, for example, the defence of abortion rights. And issues such as reproductive rights, childcare, healthcare, and housing, we know these disproportionately affect women, but struggles around them are obviously crucial to the interests of the whole working class. I want to talk a little bit about the current manifestation of the Me Too campaign, because it's very topical and I think sums up some of the differences. As everyone I'm sure is aware, it began with accusations against the Hollywood heavyweight Harvey Weinstein, who seems pretty clearly to have been a serial abuser. And I think this whole issue is a good example of where Marxists and feminists both overlap and diverge. The unwanted sexual advances, sexual comments, judgment on our morality, sexual attractiveness, etc., that all women experience have a cumulative effect, and they comprise a large component of our oppression under capitalism. And the Me Too campaign on social media has exposed how widespread this is, how normal and how ingrained in our culture. And obviously, this needs to change. Where Marxists diverge from feminists is on how this can be done. The deep structure of the social relations that condition all aspects of life in this society, including relations between men and women, can't be fixed on an individual level, nor by any process that pits women against men. Sexual harassment, sexual assault, and inequalities between individual men and women reflect the economic and social oppression generated by the profound inequality of power, status, and economic resources. And women are at greater risk when other inequalities are present. Individual behaviour can be modified, and social pressure can be brought to bear, and it has been brought to bear, to reduce the incidence of these abuses. But the root of the problem can't be addressed simply by re-educating men, but only through undoing the power disparities that come with capitalism. Now, the Me Too campaign, which aims to empower women, focuses on the sexual indignities and criminal assaults that we've suffered. But this can, of course, also play easily into the hands of those who want to deny us sexual agency, and who would present sexual activity in of itself sometimes as a danger to women. Marxists, and I think most feminists, reject this, and instead we want to fight for a society where everyone is free to express their own sexuality, free of any sort of legal or economic compulsion, on a fully informed, consensual basis. But I think it's important to distinguish sufficiently between a vast spectrum of incidents, ranging from rape and unwanted comments on the street. Neither is acceptable, but these are actions that are very different magnitudes, which deserve very different responses and consequences for the perpetrator. The bourgeois justice system is notoriously bad at dealing with rape. But to respond to this by asserting that all accusations should be believed and made public fosters a climate of trial by media that won't guarantee justice for the victims and can end up destroying the lives and careers of the innocent. And disregarding the principles of due process and the presumption of innocence creates dangerous precedents for working women and men, particularly for those who dare to challenge the ruling class, like many people in this room. For example, employers otherwise uninterested in the well-being of their female employees might be very happy to use unsubstantiated charges against trade union militants, for example, as a pretext for firing. And similar sorts of accusations have historically been used to target leftists and others considered dangerous or inconvenient. In the US, lynchings of black men were traditionally motivated by claims that they'd somehow encroached on the sexual purity of white women. Men who assault or rape women should, of course, suffer severe consequences, but the limited safeguards that we've won in the past to protect the innocent against arbitrary and capricious persecution by the state or employers should be vigorously protected. It's also noticeable that the mainstream media only began to take serious notice of sexual harassment in the workplace when it involved high-profile Hollywood celebrities and the like. The constant, unrelenting sexual harassment of low-paid women in the service industries, for example, is of no great interest, presumably because it's not glamorous. But in fact, as we all know, women are at greater risk of sexual harassment and assault when other inequalities are present, as I've said before. So this is why we have to link it to the social basis. Successful bourgeois politicians such as Hillary Clinton, Theresa May, Angela Merkel, they've shown how ultimately irrelevant gender is, because under their watch, nothing much changes for ordinary working women, apart from getting worse. They talk about women's equality, but their actions are determined by serving and protecting the status quo. And any attempt to build female unity across class lines, as feminists tend to do, can only amount to subordinating the interests of poor black and working class women to those of the rich ruling class women who derive substantial benefit from the existing social order, despite whatever prejudices that they also endure as women. The Marxist strategy of uniting all those exploited and oppressed by capitalism is the only way to lay the basis for a world free of social inequality and material want, and thus the possibility for each woman or man to pursue their own path and enjoy fulfilling personal lives. The pathology of sexual violence, which I've touched on in more detail, is at bottom a social problem which derives from a society which celebrates and rewards selfishness, possessiveness, the ability to wield power over others. And the only way that full human potential for love and all other areas of our lives can be realised is through the creation of a rationally planned socialist economy that can provide secure access to the essentials of existence for all. And once the material basis for social egalitarianism is achieved, the daily brutalities experienced by women at every social level, but particularly by those on the lower rungs of the social ladder, will gradually become a thing of the past. And until then, the best we can do is to struggle against the inequities, both great and small, imposed by capitalism, while actively seeking to construct a viable revolutionary movement capable of ending the horrors of class society once and for all.